Hello and welcome back to Vox Burner's Youth Trends podcast. This week we're bringing you another exclusive listen to one of our favourite sessions from YMS New York this October. We brought together five awesome young people to share their experiences and advice to our marketeer audience in a panel hosted by Vox Burner's founder, Simon Eder. Take it away, Simon.
Get us going for this afternoon with a youth marketing focus. We have a live Q&A with some awesome young people, some Gen Z. We have a diverse panel with us this afternoon, and we are going to explore some truly exciting things. And I don't know if people have seen in their guides for the event, the red books, but Vox Burner did some key research in advance of the event and really came up with like headlines and some of the things we have explored already this morning, but around technology, around shopping and retail, cultural insights, content. So these are some of the themes that we're going to be exploring. And what we're going to do is the panel will introduce themselves in a second, and then after the end of each section, we will open up like for you to invite our panel for comment about the burning issues that you're facing and what you'd like our panel to be honest and transparent about. And I've told them to not hold back. So maybe if we introduce ourselves. Introduce yourselves, and maybe let's go from left to right, or my left to right, your right to left, and if you share who you are, and maybe what's your biggest Gen Z marketing fail or success? Okay, your biggest Gen Z marketing fail or success, starting over there on my left.
Hello. My name is Evelyn Etienne, and I'm the creator of Affinity Magazine. Essentially, Affinity Magazine is a magazine I started at 16 because I saw kind of like a gap in teen media. I saw that a lot of teen magazines weren't actually written by teenagers, which was a strange concept to a 16-year-old me. So I decided to create a teen magazine written by teens and for teens.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, everyone. I'm Julia Chang. I am the executive director of Readify, which is a by youth, for youth nonprofit that seeks to educate kids about biases and prejudice before these things can manifest into hatred later in life. I'm a consultant for Juve Consulting, which is a consultant firm. Wow, I just said consultant many times. A consulting firm that aims to get companies interested and knowledgeable about what kids are really caring about, what teens really care about. Because oftentimes you see these advertisements that are so off-putting, that just so clearly are inauthentic and are trying to pander to what they think Gen Z cares about, and they just don't understand those things. So with both of my nonprofit and Juve Consulting, which Julian will talk more about, is that they're both run entirely by young people. They're entirely run by Gen Z. So the problem with companies these days is that to understand what we want, you need to be hearing about what we want from us. So we have that unique perspective in that we're entirely run by youth. And to answer your question about the greatest success in marketing to Gen Z, I would think first thing that comes to mind is Aerie, which is a lingerie brand by American Eagle that really emphasizes diversity, and all of their models are women of color, and they have different disabilities. And that kind of inclusion really speaks to us as a generation. So, yeah.
Great.
Sure. Hi, I'm Julian Rosenblum. I'm a senior partner at Juve Consulting, which Julia briefly spoke about. Building off of what she said about Juve, we are a youth consulting firm. We're run by individuals aged 16 to 22, and we consult with, we advise Fortune 500 companies, startups, nonprofits, just on how you can best capture really specific segments of the market within Generation Z. And we've been around since 2016, just revamped in New York City and specifically Times Square in Brooklyn this summer. And we've seen a lot of success. So that is Juve. Answering Simon's question about the best marketing techniques towards Generation Z, something that I've been seeing a lot of recently that I think is really, really effective is the use of is companies' use of teens and influencers on social media as being really, really kind of subtle advertisers for their products. I'm thinking of Amazon right now. They have a lot of representatives on Instagram, so they'll post, you know, these influencers will post stories that are pretty run-of-the-mill, but will include very discreet kind of product placement for Amazon, and it's been very effective, and it really does resonate with youth on the platform, so I think that is definitely one of the most impactful tools we've seen.
Great.
I'm Jared Newman. I'm a junior at Yale University, but when I'm not in school, I'm an analyst at BetaWorks Ventures, which is a pre-seed and seed stage venture capital fund based here in New York City. We've made investments in Gimlet Media, Anchor, Reply All, Against Gravity, GroupMe, Venmo, Twitter in previous iterations of the fund, and I'm from here in New York City.
Great. Last but not least.
My name is Jonah Stillman. I'm 19 years old, and I am the co-founder of the company Gen Z Guru, an agency that better helps brands understand the next wave of employees and consumers, obviously that being Gen Z. I am a author and a full-time speaker on the topic, so I work with brands on consulting projects and then travel monthly to different organizations, conferences, and talk about specifically this topic, how companies can truly better understand our generation. And like everyone else on this panel, there's no better way to understand the next generation than learning straight from the source. And I would say that I'm gonna choose, you know, the best marketing strategy, not a specific company example, but I would say similar to Julian, it's so important to show Gen, if you're trying to reach Gen Z in advertising and marketing, you have to show them in a natural and organic, authentic way. This doesn't mean, you know, cliche putting Gen Zers all over your billboards. It really just shows, whether it be a product, a service, really showing a Gen Zer interacting and how they can incorporate it into their daily lives and see, oh, that is truly me, that is how I would use the product. The more we see ourselves in an advertisement, the more likely we are to engage and even then some purchase your product or service.
Great, so welcome everybody. Let's take some of the themes that I mentioned, and we're gonna kick this around the panel and then invite comment from the floor. So the first area I'd like us to discuss is this move, apparently, from FOMO, which millennials were, such a buzz term for millennials, the fear of missing out, to JOMO, the joy of missing out. And supposedly, what we're seeing, but we're gonna maybe debate this, is that you guys, as Gen Z, are living a more balanced life. Yes, of course, you're, you know, connected, absolutely, but you're also taking, importantly, digital detoxes. Do you guys agree with that? And if so, how is that impacting your day-to-day? Joe, you want to take it?
Yeah, I'll start. And I think that it's an interesting point, and I would say I half agree, half disagree for a couple reasons. I'll start with saying that if you look at the pattern of how technology has been used by generation, up until our generation, it's been relatively similar until now, and it is drastically different. And the reason being, every generation before Gen Zers would be classified as digital pioneers. They've had to pioneer for technological advancement their whole lives. You'll ask a Gen Xer and they'll likely tell you they remember begging their business leaders for access to the internet in the early 2000s. You flash forward 9 years, millennials had to beg for access to social media inside of their businesses. And now you flash forward to our generation and we truly are not pioneers at all, we're digital natives. We're native to technology. We've only really known a world where our phones are smart, where our watches are smart, and where we've had constant connectivity. And what that has done is technology, as it relates to devices and social media, is not even second nature to us. It's truly part of who we are, so it's always been a part of our lives. So we've known how to personally manage it to our own liking our whole lives. Millennials, Gen Xers, baby boomers have had to learn to live in a world with Facebook, have had to learn to live in a world with Instagram and Snapchat and how it plays in and how it doesn't. For us, we've always had it, so we know the time and places that it's good to use it, and we know the time and places that we don't. So you ask about JOMO, and is there really a joy in missing out? I think I'm torn because I think a lot of Gen Zers like the idea of not having their phones and not being connected, but I don't think this means you're gonna find Gen Zers by mass taking structural digital detox, 10 days without the phone. I think it's more about finding a time and a place throughout your day where you truly do enjoy not having your phone, whether that be at the dinner table or before you go to bed or when you wake up in the morning and you don't have look at your phone till breakfast. I think that it's more about, you know, finding the joy in your everyday life and not structuring by week that I'm not gonna use my phone right now.
Julia, are you finding that balance or are you torn by the balance?
Right, yeah, so I think I've seen a statistic online that was like 40% of Gen Zers are actually aware that using Instagram has a negative effect on their mental health. So I think Gen Z has a sense of awareness there, yet we're so aware even that Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, this hyper-connectivity, this access to a wealth of information at our fingertips is so inextricable from our reality today that it would be irresponsible not to take advantage of these resources. It would be irresponsible not to be connected to our friends, to our relatives, to people that we, to new sources that we want to see, to media that we want to surround ourselves with. So I think that the balance, right, it's not that hard to achieve, and it's that awareness that we need to achieve instead, that, right, social media might not be very healthy at all times, but it's very valuable as a tool and as something that's inextricable to our lives.
And who are the, this is maybe to anyone, but who are the brands that are actually taking this facet importantly in the way that they're connecting? And any kind of like brands doing this well? I know like some brands, for example, are incentivizing us not to always be on. Any good brand examples? Or?
I know, for example, like Nickelodeon, they would do like a go out and play day for little kids, because growing up for me, like, there was technology. I remember being younger and like social media just starting, like when Facebook first started, and before Facebook there was MySpace, but even still, people still went out and played. But like now my brother, who's 13, he's on his iPad, he's on his PlayStation, he does not go outside and play at all. So like brands like Nickelodeon, they started a day where they just completely shut off the whole channel, and like you're forced to go out and play. The only way you can literally change the channel if you want to, but if it's like programming that you want to see, it's like a good incentive to go out and play, which I think it's really good. I think it's so important for me to find a balance with social media, because the number one thing brands want is engagement. And sometimes engagement can be positive or negative. And sometimes you can get a lot more negative comments than good comments, and sometimes it can weigh on you mentally. So sometimes it's really good to unplug and just take a break from social media and just have that balance.
Great. Let's maybe move on to our next subject. So we've had it this morning. It's come up a few times. But food. Your generation and food, things are changing, right? You know, gone are the days seemingly of junk food being where it's at. But you guys are into seemingly like the food of the mind. It's all about superfoods, and veganism is in vogue. That's not a dirty word anymore. You know, people say that we are what we eat. So who are you guys in by way of what you eat, and are some of those trends like resonating with you? Julian, do you want to take this?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that from the top, I think that it's really important to note that when we're talking about these trends, Generation Z isn't a monolith. So there are people, there is a whole segment of Generation Z that kind of finds the trend of veganism somewhat funny and doesn't take it seriously. And then there's another segment that buys into it completely. And so I think just in all of this conversation, it's important to note that there is variety and diversity of opinion and of trend in that way. But in terms of, you know, from a personal basis, how I look at my food trends, I'm thinking of social media, and I follow dozens of food accounts. And it's because I think that in the age of social media and in this wave of really creative social entrepreneurship, You're able to see food companies, restaurants that look to make an investment back into their communities, and they really take advantage of social media to do that. At least that's how I look at my following of food, and I also look at it for inspiration. I know that others look to food as a way to self-identify, so people follow the brand Chipotle and their food products, their franchise, obsessively. But I think people, especially in Generation Z, look at the way social media has revolutionized the food industry in a number of different ways.
Yeah, I'll kind of piggyback on that in the sense of, you're absolutely right in the aspect of gone are the days of eating junk food and fast food being what's cool, and we are so aware of what's healthy and what's not. I think part of the reason being is if looking at the history of the food industry, a lot of people in the older generations almost feel lied to. They were told that certain things were healthy when in reality they weren't. And in today's era, we're so aware of what really is good for you and what isn't that we feel responsible to almost change the way that food is consumed. And as consumers, we know that the number one thing Gen Zers spend money on by a landslide is food. And it goes along with the idea that we will purchase into an experience before we buy a product in most scenarios. And one of the reasons being is when you purchase into an experience, it gives you the availability to broadcast amongst your friends. The idea that I go to the latest bagel shop or latest, you know, poke bowl place in the city, I get to broadcast that on my social media and share with my friends and say, hey, look where I was, you should try it. And that all goes along with the idea of staying digitally connected. And at the same time, eating healthy is absolutely the new cool thing. And, you know, I think Gen Zers, it's about really in the restaurant space and food industry about creating that experience to drive a Gen Zer to your location. What are you doing in that store? And this can be translated to retail stores in general as well. What are you doing in that store to create an experience that will want to make a Gen Z consumer come in and compared to any other specific competitor?
Can I ask something?
Great. So really food as like a key to unlocking that shareability, you know, amongst peers, and a lot of other important like topics, but like coming through food, which is fascinating. Maybe if we have a couple of questions, like so far, on anything that you've heard or anything else. Yes, in the front, burning.
Yes, I have a question.
Could you just share your name and company? That would be great.
So my name is Talia Wajid, and I'm with Talia Wajid, I'm Natural Hair Care Products. The young lady mentioned, you mentioned ads about pandering, right, to youth. Can you give me an example of one of those ads so I will know not to ever do it?
Essentially, when I started my magazine, I used to read a lot of popular teen magazines. In a lot of their articles, it would, like, for example, they would have an article about, like, oh, a quiz to find out if your crush likes you. And then they would put, like, really weird lingo for, like, the quizzes, like groovy or something like that. And it just seemed so unrealistic to how teenagers are. It's like they create this, they advertise to one type of teenager, like the teenager who goes to parties every Friday, hangs out with their friends, is popular. And it seems like a lot of teen media, teen magazines at the time, they only had one simple idea of what teens are, because the whole editorial board are adults, they're not teenagers. So how exactly can you know what teens are like if your editorial board does not have any teens? So things like that's why I think it's important if you want to advertise to teenagers, it's good to reach out to teenagers so that teenagers can connect to your content.
Thank you.
Yeah, on the left.
My name is Leda Hernandez. I'm the CEO and founder of Sedulux, and we do trend forecasting for the luxury space. So my question to you guys, so I'm a millennial, and millennials are kind of like living in between two worlds, which is kind of like the digital world and the world that we thought was going to be that was told to us by our parents, which had nothing to do with what today is. So there are several things that are kind of like a disconnect when it comes to millennials. We've had, for example, a decline in terms of marriages. We've had a decline in the birth rate since 2011. So millennials are not getting married as much. If they are, they're getting married later. Same thing with children. So we're expecting millennials basically to have one-child households or pet households. So my question to you guys, Gen Z, you guys think in a different way than we do. So my question to you guys is, how do you guys think about marriage and children?
I think a big part of Gen Z is the idea of like rejecting labels, right? So for so many years, it's been, you know, this is a family. You got a husband and you have a child, right? This is a family. However, Gen Z is a movement that's trying to change everything that they know about the world, right? Even like what a family is. It's like older generations, you can't be telling me what a family is. I get to define that. I can still be happy and not have a kid myself. And I think that teens just like with this idea in mind that like we can be constructing our own truths and our own realities. We don't subscribe to the same norms that have been put in place for so many years.
Let's move on. Actually, exciting topic, but let's actually move on in a slightly different dimension, if that's all right, from the last question, which is around emotive tech. And we see right now that technology is becoming much more emotionally integrated into our lives. And I really wondered whether you guys think that is exciting or scary. And maybe just segueing on from that question around families and marriage and so on. For example, are you guys happy to trust AI to set you up on dates? But also answering around the emotive tech as well. Julian.
Sure. So I think the concern around artificial intelligence really varies on two levels. The first is how informed a particular consumer is on what exactly AI is. There are a lot of different definitions and a lot of different applications, and people view this in very different lenses. And then the second level of concern is how it's being levied, how it's being applied. So there are a lot of applications, right now I'm thinking kind of ads on Instagram, where they take, these advertisers take your search habits, your followers, people you're following, and then they tailor, based on that data, completely autonomously, specific ads that they think might appeal to you. It's kind of selective discrimination of certain ads and how they deliver it to you. And in that way, it's very effective because people think that companies are being really specific in customizing certain ad experiences and product experience for individuals, and people love that, both companies and consumers. Companies are making a lot of money, consumers think companies care about them. But I think that there also are scary applications. Simon talked about setting you up on a date. When AI tries to be that intrusive, at least from my perspective, it becomes a bit, it can be perceived as threatening. When they try to get involved in very intimate details. But as I said at the top, Gen Z is not a monolith, so that might not be representative of most people, but there is a lot of skepticism on multiple fronts there.
Jared, emotive tech, scary or exciting?
Yeah, so I think binaries like this are a little bit unhelpful when we think about technology, because the technology that enables AI to set people up on dates is already here, right? And so raise your hand if you're familiar with the virtual influencer Little Michaela. Right, so that's not enough of you. So Little Michaela is a CGI influencer that's completely generated via AI algorithms. And she has over 1.3 million followers on Instagram, and that's emotive technology, right? That's a following of people that believe that a CGI character is influential enough to tell them what to buy. And so when we think about whether things are scary or not scary, it's suggesting that we have the option to stop it, which I don't actually think any of us believe, right? These things are already out here. You know, you look at technology behind things like deep fakes around video-to-video synthesis, right? This kind of stuff is already happening. And so when we think about AI being scary, or what Julian's talking about and how we levy it and apply it, it's actually educating people on this stuff already being here and where it is in our lives.
Okay, I can see that last little burst has excited a few questions in the audience. Let's take the question there in the middle on the left. Sorry, my left.
Hi, Joy from Instagram. Good to see y'all. I'm familiar with you, so hey. Second question is, what are two, just if each of you could go quickly, two apps that you have on your phone that you're like, oh, this audience knows nothing about this? Like two apps that you don't think we've heard of that you use often.
Apart from Instagram.
Two apps that
you haven't.
Two apps that you think we would think that nobody would know about, correct? Anybody want to start?
Joe, you want to take it?
I'm kind of boring. I don't really have any exciting apps, to be honest.
Do any of you know Panda? URL is panda.af. Panda. It is a voice-activated AR application, so you can say things like pizza, and a pizza will appear, much like a filter on Snapchat or Instagram, but it's all voice-activated, and those kinds of capabilities aren't around in Snapchat right now. And the other is Breaker. Do you guys know Breaker? This is actually a BetaWorks portfolio company's. Breaker is a social sharing app for podcasts. So a lot of the way that, I mean, Gen Z, we listen to a lot of podcasts, the ad revenue for these things is going to absolutely boom in the next couple of years. Breaker is a social sharing that allows you to follow what your friends are listening to recommend and suggest different podcasts.
One app that I have, I don't know if you guys heard of the app called Later. Basically, it's like an app that you can schedule like Instagram posts like ahead of time. For me, usually it's really because my magazine is content filled, so I have to constantly be uploading content. So I usually create content days ahead, like quotes or anything, and I just post it on Later, and it schedules the posts, and it just makes it so much simpler.
I have this app called Dailyo. I think it's pretty big, but I'm not sure if anyone here would know about it, in the audience at least. But essentially, it's like an online journal where I can put in what my mood was for the day. So it has like a happy face and like a medium face and a sad face. And then I can put in what like activities I did that day. And you can like track your moods and sort of see how you're doing mentally. And I guess it's sort of like a check-in, which I appreciate.
I'm pretty boring with my phone. I have pretty much what you'd expect. I'd say the newest app I got is an app called Drop. I'm sure plenty of people have it here. You buy things, and certain companies will like give you points, and then if you get enough points, you get free gift cards for like Starbucks, things like that. But I don't have anything too unique there.
If I were to share one, I use an app called Trip It. It's kind of just like helps you stay on top of things between literally putting, you can link it to a lot of different apps, so like your email, your contacts, your calendar, and it'll put everything in and almost organize your day and break it down to the sense of saying, if you're here, you gotta leave this and then. Not necessarily groundbreaking, but definitely a convenience app, and yeah.
Okay, do we maybe have one final question? Let's take it from the middle. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Susan Lin. I'm at Harvard Medical School. And so I have a question. It's great to hear from you, the younger generation. I have a question about the generation after yours. And at what age do you think it's ethical for companies to target children with marketing? Okay. At what age should the kids be, not the company?
Okay, thank you. So good to end on a future note. So from Gen Z, I guess, to Gen A or something.
Gen AA, whatever.
Gen AA. What should brands do when like marketing to the next generation?
I'll start there, and I think that's a great question. And looking at the next generation, we say that, you know, the theory behind generational differences beyond just birth years when you were born is that, you know, every 16 or 17 years, there's been enough change in events and conditions in the world that a kid born 15 years from now will not recognize the same events that I did growing up, whether that be the 2009 recession, post 9/11 effects. And so that is what changes it. As to say what age it's appropriate for companies to start marketing to teenagers, there's a big discussion with this now, and it's actually happening in the YouTube space around YouTube content creators pushing their merchandise to young audiences. And there's actually laws in place that prevent certain TV programming for advertisers. They can only have a certain amount of time to advertise on TV shows, and they're talking about, should this be embedded into YouTube? Because you have 6, 7, 8-year-old kids going to their parents being convinced by YouTubers that they need this shirt, they need this hat. And I think that, in my opinion, ethically, I think once you're around the early, mid stages of a teenager, you have enough sense of what money is, how money is made, what things should cost. So I think around then, marketing is going to start happening to teenagers. But in today's world, it's almost impossible to avoid marketing. A lot of kids are using platforms like Instagram, like Musical.ly, and they're being targeted there. So I think as we continue on, kids are going to become more and more accustomed to being marketed to.
Just very quickly, I'm conscious of time, but just taking this one step forward, I know that it's the elections in just a month or so's time. And I just wondered what you thought, just extending that question, about what gets the next generation like going and moving. Maybe, Jared, do you want to grab that one?
Sure. I think that a lot of the success of the Trump campaign in 2016 has to do with the fact that they were able to leverage social platforms and do audience targeting, as Julian was talking about. And in the 2018 and 2020 elections, I imagine that a lot of that will actually be going to conversational interfaces like text. There's a lot of organizing and political movement around reaching people via SMS, and so I can imagine that when it comes to mobilizing people for whatever political cause, that'll be key.
Julia, final reflections on the future?
Just in general. Well, in general, I think the future is in very good hands. If you look at Gen Z today, we're very active, we're very engaged. Going back to the whole voting thing, I think now more than ever, when we come to November 6th, we're gonna see the biggest turnout thus far for young people. And if you look at, sort of going back to that, the candidates that were popular among young people, they weren't the youngest candidates, right? We aren't convinced by just superficial things. We, you know, on the Democratic side, most young people supported Bernie Sanders because those were the issues that mattered to us, and those were the issues that we were willing to advocate for. And I think going forward, Gen Z has a huge voice, and we are more than willing to use it.
Great. We could have gone on for hours. But please give our panel a huge round of applause.
Thanks to Simon for that and our panel of great young people for that really inspiring session. And we'd love to see you at our next Youth Marketing Festival in London this coming April, with sessions from the likes of Microsoft, eBay, Nike, and many more. Check out voxburner.com for more info, and I look forward to welcoming you back next Monday with some more youth trends.